There's a popular swim spot south of Santa Rosa, New Mexico. It's known for its crystal clear, bright blue water and being a great place for recreational swimming and training to become certified for scuba diving. But for as beautiful as it is, it's just as dangerous. And in this story, two different groups of divers would make the same mistake years apart. I'm Tatiana, and this is Occurrence. In March of 2016, the ADM Exploration Foundation got rare permission to enter the Blue Hole Lagoon caves. It was a pretty big deal that they were given the go-ahead because prior to this, the caves had been closed for almost 40 years. The layout of the Blue Hole swim site is, at its surface, it's about 80 feet or 24 meters wide and 80 feet deep. As it goes down, the sides of the swim hole go in before widening back out, kind of like an hourglass shape. At the bottom, it's 130 feet across, and there are some random objects and stones scattered on the bottom too. On the east side at the base, there's an opening. The opening leads to an underwater cavern that at the time was filled with tons of rocks and covered with a metal grate. I'll explain what led to the rocks and the grate being there later, but for now, just know there's a reason why they originally felt the need to keep people out of this particular cave system. The cave part of the Blue Hole was pretty much a vertical shaft with tons of different offshoots of rooms and tunnels of different sizes. The pattern was like a maze and it kind of looked like intestines. You couldn't really be sure what each offshoot looked like until you entered it. So you could turn into a tunnel, thinking it might be a big room, and it's actually a narrow opening with a dead end just a few feet inside. The ADM team was led by Kurt Bowen, and since starting in 2013, they had been to the cave entrance of the Blue Hole twice, working to remove the rocks and open up the top portion. And now they were back to continue their progress. The goal was to map out the intricate maze-like passages and make them more accessible. Previously, they opened a narrow passageway from the cave entrance to a tight restriction 160 feet deep. When they were working, the team would split up into three groups. Some were clearing the opening on the upper portion, some were trying to open the restriction at 160 feet, and some were exploring the passages beyond the 160-foot restriction. Because of the danger associated with everyone moving loose rocks around at the same time and stationed at various levels in a nearly vertical shaft, the teams worked one group at a time. The plan was for the team exploring beyond the 160-foot restriction to work first and then exit so that the team opening the 160-foot restriction could then work and leave. And then lastly, the team working on the cave entrance would work and then leave. The team that was working to explore past the restriction was made up of Mike Young and 43-year-old Robert Thompson, who went by Shane. Mike was using a side-mount rebreather system, and Shane was using a back-mounted system. Now, the positioning of the tanks on your body is in the name. Side mounts are on the side, and back mounts is on the back area. It's my understanding that the system people choose is up to personal preference, even though a lot of people have strong opinions on each. But side mount allows you to easily look at and access the regulators and valves since they're on your side and not behind you, and it's easier to get into thin passages. Shane provided support while Mike led the way, and they continued working in tight passages with loose rocks and easily stirred silt, which could very quickly lead to zero visibility conditions. If you're new here, you can compare a silted out cave to driving through fog or blizzard conditions so thick that you can't even see the hood of your car while you're driving, and your headlights aren't helping at all, if not just making things worse. As the pair continued exploring, they came across several passages that were dead ends, but each time they were able to make it back to the main passage because they laid guidelines to follow back. The Blue Hole is a sinkhole that has approximately 3,000 gallons or a little more than 11,300 liters of water that flow through it every minute. The water springs out from an underground source 200 feet from west of the Ogallala Aquifer, and the water stays at a pretty consistent temperature of 62 degrees Fahrenheit or 16.6 degrees Celsius. But the deeper you go into the cave system, the more rocks you have to navigate. Some of the rocks were actually boulders the size of cars, and other times there would be piles of small ones they needed to move in order for them to continue on. And of course, they had to be careful with it because you can easily cause a disaster trying to move around rocks in a heavily silted cave. Mike and Shane ended up encountering two more severe restrictions, with the second one being at 194 feet deep. Mike was able to squeeze through the tight areas easier because of his side mount system, while Shane had a harder time due to his back mounted system. They only went a few feet past that before wrapping it up on the first day. Now, the reason the ADM team was able to get clearance to map the cave was because the team was full of very experienced technical divers. Shane grew up in Florida and started diving at a young age. He was a well-known scuba diving instructor and worked with a construction company that specialized in underwater construction and was involved in different diving businesses like salvage work and boat maintenance. He was a diving instructor for the Navy and was involved with recovery operations for divers who died in underwater caverns too. A lot of the team members had a skill level similar to that. And the next day, the ADM team was back at the Blue Hole site, and the plan was the same. Working in shifts, one group at a time. Since Shane had a hard time with the second restriction the day before, they planned for him to stay at the exit side of the restriction and not go through it, while Mike explored beyond it alone. He reached about 45 feet beyond the restriction before deciding that it wasn't possible to go any further and there was no reason to continue exploring. So he makes his way back, and on his way back up, Mike was surprised to run into Shane, who took it upon himself to go past the second restriction. By the time they ran into each other, Shane was showing signs of panicking, probably because he had already gotten stuck a few times on his way to Mike and had to force himself through the tight maneuvers alone. Where they met was pretty tight, so Mike told Shane to turn around. It shouldn't have been too shocking when Shane signaled that he couldn't. It took a good bit of effort to get Shane turned around and Mike in front to lead the way. Mike actually thought he might injure Shane with how hard he had to pull on him to get him in the right direction. Mike went through the second restriction first, and then he had to pull on Shane to help him get through. But that caused them to be tightly wedged in opposite directions. So they again had to go through the difficult task of getting turned around and facing the right way. Up to this point, all of the maneuvering and flailing caused a lot of the silt to surround them. But it wasn't a huge deal because they had their guideline to follow. But that last turnaround caused some of the tie-offs on their guidelines to come loose, creating a loose guideline. So while the line could still lead them out, it wouldn't always be in the location that they wanted it to be. The line can sometimes go into places too small for divers to navigate, creating a line trap, which is exactly what happened several times during Mike and Shane's exit. Mike lost the lines a few times and had to search to find it again. A few times he had to stop and calm himself down and remember that he was on a rebreather. His air was being recycled and giving him plenty of time to get out. At one point, Mike kicked up silt while following the safety line and it caused a zero visibility event. Shane tried to get control of the line since it caused him to panic and he pulled on it forcefully, which caused them both to get crammed in a tight space. Mike managed to get free, and once he was calm and on the line again, he thought they were safe because he could feel vibration from Shane being on the line. He thought Shane was ahead of him, so he crossed a secure tie-off to get onto an intact part of the line. But once he did, he realized he couldn't feel the vibrations anymore. So he realized Shane must have actually been behind him, so he turned back to find him, just hoping he wasn't stuck somewhere again. But on his way to Shane, the vibration stopped. It took Mike a while to find him, and when he did find Shane, he was dead. He was trapped in a tight restriction in an unmapped branch that went in the wrong direction. Mike tried to get him out, but after a while he realized he couldn't, especially given how long he had been at that depth. He was exhausted and had cold water seeping into his suit, not to mention he still had to decompress before he could even get out of the water. So he left Shane and made his way back to the cave entrance using the guideline, where he told the safety divers that hovered at the entrance that Shane wasn't coming back. He decompressed at the cave entrance for a few hours before making his way to the surface and telling the police what happened, while he warmed up and recovered. Mike wanted to go back for Shane that night, but his team told him to wait until the morning. They went back for Shane the next day, and because of the restriction, they had to remove his rebreather, which was left in the cave. But they managed to get his GoPro footage, which told them what happened. Shane followed after Mike, pretty much right after he went out of sight past the second restriction. He started panicking, and his hard breathing overloaded his rebreather system, so he had to switch to his emergency gas. He ended up blowing through that too because he just couldn't get himself to calm down. He wasn't thinking clearly enough to switch back to his rebreather after going through the emergency gas. And when he was found, his suit was torn up from how aggressively he was squeezing through the boulders. In the end, the team did technically accomplish the goal of mapping the cave, but the cave was so sketchy that it would have been limited to only the most advanced divers, and it was determined it just wasn't worth it, because that wasn't the first tragedy in the cave system. After Shane's death, the cave was resealed and has not been opened again. Now, do you remember how earlier I mentioned the tons of rocks that closed the cave entrance to begin with? On March 10, 1976, a group of 10 University of Oklahoma State students was scuba diving in the Blue Hole. They started their group training dive at 10:30 a.m., and before they started, everyone was warned not to wander off or go into any openings or entrances near the bottom of the lake. So for a little while, everyone was doing the training and swimming around. But after a while, 22-year-old David Gregg and Mike Goddard didn't surface. The state police were called, and they arrived on scene at 11:35 a.m. Search and recovery was underway at noon, and after the first dive, they realized that the two were not in the main part of the lake, the part they were told to stick to. Realizing this, the search was called off for the day, and they returned the next morning on March 11th and continued the search at 10:15 a.m. Around 2:15 a.m., David's body was found in a room at 125 feet deep, inside of the cavern part of the Blue Hole. As for Mike, it was a bit harder. The recovery team did 11 more dives through March 13th. So 11 dives in 2 days, up to 200 feet in depth, and they still couldn't find Mike. The operation was suspended due to the exhaust air from the divers loosening the rocks and creating unsafe diving conditions. It wouldn't be until April 25th that they started looking for Mike again, and on the third dive, they finally found him. He was 177 feet deep, and another dive was required to actually recover his remains. It took 6 weeks to find Mike Goddard's remains, which is crazy, and I guess just shows how difficult the cave system actually was. One of the recovery divers actually said he hung off a cliff and had a 200,000 candle power flashlight and couldn't see the bottom or the other side. He said the water was clear, but it must have been a huge cavern because he couldn't see anything on the other side at all. It was after the passing of those two students and the incredibly difficult time the search and recovery team had trying to navigate the cave to get them that led to the city sealing the entrance with a huge metal grate. And then the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers went in and dumped at least 2 dump trucks full of rocks on top of the grate to make sure no one was getting in. The city actually didn't know about that. But I think they believed they could reopen it so many years later to allow more expert divers to swim there if the ADM team managed to successfully open it up and determine what routes would be safe and what areas people should be blocked off from. But losing an advanced diver in the process made them realize it might not be safe for anyone. Unfortunately, 37 years apart, divers' lives were lost in the same place. The Blue Hole is still a popular swim and dive site, with thousands of people swimming there every year. But today, you'll find a metal gate covering the cave entrance to keep anyone who just can't help themselves out. Leave your thoughts in the reviews or comments, And don't forget to follow or subscribe to hear more stories like this. All sources can be found at occurrencepod.com. Stay safe and see you next week.